Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Bench Talk. I am really excited to introduce you all to my next guest. This actually is our last in our summer series of talking with women who are doing the damn thing, women who have started their career very modestly, and their careers have taken them to levels that, you know, we aspire to be at. So without further ado, I would love to introduce everyone to one of my favorite people in the world, Melissa Walters. You. Melissa, say hello to the folks.
Hello, folks. So good to be here. And thank you so much, Jackie. You are one of my favorite people. So I'm so happy to be talking to you today and to your audience.
So let me tell everyone why Melissa is my favorite, one of my favorite persons. We're cousins, right,
yes,
Lisa?
Yes, you're my cousin.
We are cousins. We go back, oh gosh, our moms were pregnant at the
from day
time,
one.
Right?
Day
our
one.
Our mothers are sisters and we're pregnant at the same time, but I came first. We are, what, 2 months apart?
2 months, yeah.
2 months, so I'm your elder, right?
Just a little bit bigger cousin, little.
Right, and so we grew up together. Our lives have been parallel. We have lovely stories
lovely,
of growing
up
in the nation of Brooklyn. So,
yes.
We go way back, and I call her Lisa, you know. So you'll hear me refer to my cousin here as Lisa. She's an extraordinary woman with an extraordinary story. You know, I admire her, her will, her endurance, just the will that she has. And honestly, I'm going to be a little selfish and say, I think it's in our genes.
It is.
Like, our mothers are sisters, right? You can't get any closer than that, right?
That's right. Yep.
We share the same grandmother, and it is the women in our family. You know, we have an interesting thread of women. We all typically share that same trait, you know, of endurance,
that strength.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have seen it in our moms. We saw it in our grandmother. You know,
grandma, definitely,
exactly, right. Shout out to Mavis. You know,
I
still with us, right?
In our hearts, always.
But Lisa, I want to talk with you about your journey. You know, most of my listeners are going through this career transition or trying to elevate their career, get to the next level. My focus have been in helping women of all backgrounds, get to the next level in their career and help them navigate this world of, you know, whether it's corporate America or wherever you are, just that navigate your career, because it is a part of us. And not everyone is an entrepreneur. You know, there's some of us who still do the 9-to-5, and that is totally okay, you know, and some of us who do the 9-to-5 to get to the, you know, being your own boss type of a thing, that's okay too, you know. Mm-hmm. So I have women that are on that journey, and it's a common journey, the journey of success. And we all define success as, you know, our own personal successes, right? Whatever that is to us. But I wanted to have you on because I really think that your story is very inspirational. And maybe I'm a little biased because we are family. Because we are family, but I totally admire you. But enough of me gushing. Let's talk about how you started. So Lisa is an executive in the public sector. She didn't start out as an executive, right?
Right.
We're at the same age. So we started, what, is it 20 years ago? A little over 20 years ago?
Yeah, a little over 20 years ago. Straight out of actually starting my work in the public sector, well, really in human services, in my early parts of my college years. So started work right away after high school while going to school. So one of the foundations of my career and my life was always having to multitask, right? And so we know that you typically can't really multitask. You can only focus on one thing at one time. But starting out, I had to go to work and go to school,
right?
And so that experience allowed me to be in the work world while I was actually doing my associates, right?
Okay.
And getting the experience with different parts of the New York City population. So I have always been focused on working on the marginalized portions of this city, right? So
straight out of high school?
Straight out of high school. So
wow.
My first job was working at a place called Greenwich House while I was finishing my associate's degree. So I had an opportunity to stay home. I was a mom pretty early on and was able to take a little time off between high school and college. But because I had my son in my early 20s, there really wasn't a choice to as opposed to working and staying home and going to school. So I was fortunate enough to start out at an organization that worked with those who suffered from HIV and AIDS and substance abuse and mental health disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that because I'm from Brooklyn, Brownsville, Brooklyn, you know, never ran, never will. And so that tenacity, right, that tenacity that, you know, my neighborhood taught me allowed me to go into the far reaches of communities in New York City and not be afraid to engage with those who were living in a lot of the social ill conditions, like so poor housing, you know, rough neighborhoods, dealing with chronic illnesses, substance abuse. And so what I learned from my neighborhood and what I was learning in school actually added to my work experience. So I was able to bring who I was, and I really loved the work.
Let me ask you a question. Did
sure.
Did you know in high school what you wanted to do?
Actually, no. Actually, you know, I'm so glad you asked that because it brings me to the piece of how my confidence had to start to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still in development. So that's one thing I just want to say, because it's sometimes people see from the outside and think that it was always there. It's something that you have to curate and develop and nurture within yourself. And so in high school, I thought that I never thought I would go to college, to tell you the truth.
Wow.
You know, always, I always thought that everybody around me was smarter and just got better grades. And I kind of felt like that person that was really in middle. I always felt like I was in the middle.
Mm.
And it was a girlfriend of mine who's actually still, you know, my girlfriend today. You know my girlfriend, Rocky.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was always a go-getter. She was born in the Caribbean and had come here at a very early age. So the way I saw discrimination and marginalization, she saw it through a different lens.
Right.
You know, in the West Indies, it's more class as
class.
Opposed to it is to race.
Right, right.
So she never saw barriers. And one of the benefits I think I had was looking through her lens, because she didn't see black and white. She saw whether you have money or not. It's a different lens. And so when you speak toward that and you behave toward that and you look at your what you're going to occupy your time and invest in, it's not about I may be the only brown girl there.
Mm-hmm.
It's I'm coming here to win.
Right.
And so just having, you know, I never forget early on when I was finishing up my early studies in college, you know, I took a lot of, you know, African study classes and classes about Latino history and history of the Caribbean. And she and I would have talks about it. And it was just incredible where you're raised from. It definitely colors the lens and how you interact in society and where you see yourself fitting in society. So she had friends from all over the world, where I had to develop my ownness and know that I am a part of this world, and I'm not just Brownsville, Brooklyn, and I'm not just Caribbean American community.
Right.
I am a part of this whole I have a worldwide view, and I need to, and I needed to step into that, but I had to develop that. You know, we can't help from where we start and like what lens we look through. Right. So she actually, it's actually after I had my son, I had been working in human services, working in local outreach programs. Had my son, took a little time off, and then it was time to go back to work.
Right.
And I never forget a day I didn't realize I had suffered from postpartum depression. I thought that, you know, this is what it was. You had a baby and, you know, you had your mate that really didn't understand everything you were going through. And this was how it was.
Right.
Until one day she says to me, like, Melissa, you have to stop. You can't stay in this place. You know, my son was, at that time, I believe 2 going on 3. And she says, you have to get out the house and you actually have to stop crying.
Right.
She says, I want you. And at that time she was already, believe it or not, in our early 20s, she was already a manager in a public not-for-profit human service organization.
Wow.
And she says, I'm going to see if they have any openings here and try to get you in. Because at that time I was I think very close to finishing my associates, or maybe just finished the associates, having to take off time to take care for my son.
Mm-hmm.
And she says to me, I want you to, every day, 3 times a day, I want you to look in the mirror and say, I am a sexy bitch. I lied to you not, Jackie. She says, I want you to look in the mirror 3 times a day, like it's breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you look in the mirror and you say, I am a sexy bitch.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I do because, you know, when something similar with my clients, but I don't, not that I'm a sexy bitch, but
we definitely
do that. But no, it's good to have a girlfriend like that, fearless, that can help pull you up. You know,
and that helps
tell people you have to be mindful of who you spend the most of your time with, you know,
who is
in your circle. And it is so true that you are, what is it, the average of the 5 people that you're around. And to have someone that strong and someone who is that motivational and inspirational in the early beginnings, it's priceless. It's priceless.
It definitely helped. Absolutely. And that helped me to actually. You know, depression is a thing where it can really have you not feeling pretty.
Right.
And not feeling like you own this, right?
Right.
And that little ritual helped me to feel like I can do this.
Right.
So, you know, one step at a time. And so there was a position that, an entry-level position, actually, for a basic case manager outreach worker. And she says, there's an opening. Lisa, you have all the qualifications. You know, by the time I got in, I already had the associates because I got in with the associates. And I worked there for about 3 years and quickly climbed up the ladder to being a supervisor of a team of case managers. And it was because it was at that point I had found my bliss. Because like you had asked earlier, you know, did I know what I wanted to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, you know.
So is
you and I, oh,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you and I often, you and I talk all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And so you were one of my supporters, especially because, you know, we had our children around the same time and we could share everything, right? So.
Right.
Having you in my corner and knowing that we came from a family that there was no room for not moving and failing. Right? There was no laying down and not getting up. Right.
Exactly.
So we had that, like you said earlier, that genetic piece, but having the comfort and the support from you that, so that when I had a bad time and I can share transparently what I was going through, you checked me and like, no, chick, it's not going like that. You're not the one who is going to, you know, lose.
Right.
And so having, you know, you in my life and Raquel in my life, and then, you know, my mom as well being a super supporter. So having that support where I could go back to work and my mom watched my son, right?
Mm-hmm.
And being able to know that I didn't have to worry about those things. And in those early times, in the relationship with my children's father, you know, I didn't know what real love and commitment was, right? And so that I was dealing with things that, and through a lens that hadn't fully maturated. And I don't want to say matured as a negation, but maturated to me really liking me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So in those early years dealing with my patients, I realized that I wanted to do something in healthcare, right? I wanted to get the knowledge and understand the communities of New York City. So I went to a CUNY college, right? So I didn't have the funds to go to private college, but I did take advantage of the New York City public university, and got actually all three of my degrees from public universities. So moving on from that non-for-profit where, you know, my girlfriend had given me the in, and she rose to being a director there as well.
Wow.
And so it was an organization that had a lot of diversity, you know, where your voice could be heard because the leadership there really was invested in community. And so
I want to stop you there really quick, because you said something that's really important and I don't want to glaze over it. You had your associates, right?
Yeah.
And someone saw in you the ability to do a specific position, right? And encouraged you to apply for that position. Did you think that you had the qualifications?
Oh no. Like, again, I still had that mediocre, you know, and, you know, I think one of the things, and I believe in God and I am a Christian woman. I ain't the best all the time, Jackie, you know, I got my stuff with me, but you know,
works in progress,
you know, and I didn't see what I still hadn't seen what God had invested in me, what he had put in my heart to love and care for people.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't tied to what I was going to get into return. And, you know, my mom, you know what I'm saying? And I think I authentically learned that from her. You know, her nickname in the family is Mother Teresa.
Right.
And so she showed me how to give of myself without looking for the return. And the best reward was knowing that I gave, that I helped somebody. Right. And I could, you know, being from Brooklyn and being a New Yorker and being down to earth, I could help my clients see themselves as worthy, right? Because I was learning that myself and just kind of transmitting that to them, saying, you are worth good health care. You are worth me advocating for you. You are worth wanting a different standard in life and wanting whatever it is that you need to live a life in wellness, right?
So you were imparting that as you're learning it yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
And those clients helped me to actually see that within myself.
Right.
You know, so in my early.
Here's the underlying theme with that thing with that. And some of my past few conversations and podcasts have been around that theme a little loosely, but I want to tie it back to it because we sometimes think that we need to be there, wherever that there is, fully there before we can help other people.
Right.
That is not the case, you know?
It's not the case, not at all.
Back to your friend seeing in you what you didn't see in yourself. And, you know, you obviously applied for the position, interviewed, and got the position, right?
Yeah.
That took some confidence, even if you didn't have fully all the confidence, or maybe you didn't have 100% of the qualifications. You presented yourself in such a way where you, I hate using the word sold, but you proved or you showed them the value that you can bring to this organization and to this position, and you got it. So there are women that I talk with that feel like, you know, sometimes they have to have a PhD before they go for something. Into something.
No.
No, you don't. And I just had this conversation. There are, okay, I'm a little bit of man bashing here, so trigger warning. There are men out there who really should not be in the positions that they're in. But the
definitely
not. They're in it is because they have the confidence. They can they can sell themselves, you know, and they don't may not even have 10% of the qualifications, but they got in because they interviewed well. You know, they had the confidence to control the situation and make things happen for themselves. We tend not to do that. We feel like we need all of these degrees behind us. We need all of this you know, experience. So speak to that a little bit.
So that is so true. And, you know, early on, as I look back on my life, I realized that I had to, what I actually did was use a lens that was surrounded around the theme, you fake it until you make it. Right. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that, not to say that I was faking it, that was the thought pattern that even though I don't think that I have the right degree, even though I know I didn't have the years of experience that I have now, even though I know I'm not friends with none of these people or, you know what I'm saying? The ends that you get, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to pull my hair back neat. I'm going to have on that good interview outfit. I'm going to research the words that people, because that's what I do. Every job that I went to, I researched and I studied and I look, what is the newest trend in interview attire? What are the key words that people are using?
Pause for a second, because I have to tell you, when I am consulting and I am talking to my women and I'm like, you have to do the work. Yeah. Not the, you know, fluffy stuff that you think, no. You have to in there and do the work. You hit the nail on the head. What are the key words? What are the words people are using in this industry? Yeah. How do I, you know, you have to fit in, if you will, right?
Yep.
So go ahead. I'm excited because you got it. Like that, those are the things that you have to do. And honestly, there's no magic to it.
There's no magic.
Huge secret. It's like you really need to do the work. And the problem is, a lot of women or a lot of people don't want to put in that.
Don't want to do the work. Right.
No one do the work.
Right. Yeah, because people like to make it seem, I have a model that everybody wants to look nice and shiny on the outside.
Yes.
And that's a facade.
Yes.
There's a buildup and there's a preparation that they did to get there. It's not automatic. And the people that make it look automatic is because they did just that. They did the preparation to make it look as if it was automatic.
Absolutely.
That's the secret sauce.
A little story, just very, very short anecdote for me. I remember one time, my background is in project management and program management, and I work on a lot of large projects. And some even more seasoned, if you will, project managers or program managers will look at me and like, you know, how did you get that? Or it seems so easy for you. And I'm like, if you only knew. And I'm glad you think it's easy. Then I'm doing something right. I'm doing something right. I know my stuff, right? And
that's
I'm doing something right. But yet I had quote unquote failures, what I really call lessons learned. You know, I had stumbling blocks. I had roadblocks. I had things that I had to learn on the job. No one taught me, you know, I had to learn on my own until I got to a point where, okay, I got this and I'll do it. And in doing it, I will make it look so easy to you.
That's right. Because at that point, you own it.
At that point, I owned it, right? And so before being a project manager, you know, I used to have a wedding business, a wedding.
Yeah.
I'm laughing at it because it prepared me for what I'm doing now, and I didn't even realize it. So one day, I have to have somebody interview you to give my story, because I was doing wedding coordination. And at the end of the day, the guests would, oh, this was so beautiful, and this was that. Little did they know, during the ceremony or during the reception or even leading up to it, there were so many things that went wrong, but I was able to present it in a way that you had no idea. Inside, I'm like, dying, oh my gosh, the caterer forgot the this or the that, but you don't know. You know,
but that goes back to where we're from.
Yeah.
We didn't come from a family that just had it like that. We came from a family that came from Jamaica with nothing, Jackie.
Yep. Yeah.
We have a family that came from Jamaica with nothing at all and built it up, and they stayed in their family unit to help build everybody up. And all of the sisters have children that are college graduates, homeowners, mm-hmm. business owners, entrepreneurs.
Right.
That didn't happen by mistake. That's because we know, because when they sent us back to Jamaica for the summer, had to go back and understand what it was to struggle. So when we came back up here, we had several channels of TV and hot and cold water. We understood that they fought tooth and nail to make a foundation for us in America. We got our family in London. We got our family in Canada. Mm-hmm. We have our family throughout the United States. So this wasn't by just default where we are.
Right.
This is a genetic pattern and a template that was set for us that we watched and we mimicked. And we come from women that never let the spoon, the egg in the spoon, you know that race? They never let it drop. It never dropped, because if it did drop, they scrambled that shit, ate it, and they got another egg. You know what I'm saying?
I'm laughing because we lived it, right? You and I
lived it.
And we could look back now and be so thankful.
Thankful.
That we had the experiences that we had, because it made us into the women that we are now. Right?
Yeah.
We had
the
models that we had, because now it has made us into the women that we are now. You said something that just kind of triggered a memory. And I tell people all the time, I used to think that I lived in Jamaica as much as we used to go down every summer, as soon as school started until school just came back into session.
Yeah.
Like, those were our summers. And
initially,
I mean, we were so young, we didn't really like it because there was no hot water where we were.
Yeah. It was one channel that turned off at a certain time.
And our grandmother was very strict. And
we had to read books. There was no getting your hair done. You had that plait. They washed your hair and plaited your hair. And we were just in the yard playing with each other.
With each other, climbing the trees, coming in the house. There's no AC, you know.
No AC. Forget about that.
We were in what was considered the country in Jamaica. And, you know, there was no electricity. But that formed who we are now, with the resilience. Mm-hmm. You know, but not everybody has that experience.
Yeah.
So talk to that a little bit. I know we kind of got off a little, you know, on a little bit of a tangent, but I want to talk about that, because not everyone has that experience that could really help mold them. So what do you say? What do you say to that? Like, how you don't necessarily have to go to Jamaica and live like, you know, it's 20, but what do you say to those who've not had that experience, to, you know, how do they get in that mindset and have the confidence and the motivation to keep going?
You know, I realized within myself, this year I just developed a motto. I try to have a motto every year. And my motto for 2019, and I might let this flow over to 2020, is I like me enough for me and you.
Say it again for the people in the back.
I like me enough for me and you.
Absolutely. And tell people what that means. I understand it. For those who don't understand.
Especially where I am in my career now, and, you know, going from case manager to supervisor to licensed social worker to executive director, I realized along my journey, a lot of time I was so invested on how much you liked me and how much you believed in my intelligence and how much you believed that I was actually having a seat at this table and belonged here. And I decided to let that go. I like me enough for me and you. I think I'm educated enough for me and you. I think I belong at this table enough for me and you. I think my input and my contributions are enough for me and you to believe in them. So even if you don't believe in them, I'm here.
Right.
I'm bringing it.
When you have that type of confidence, it is very hard for people to throw you off your game.
Also, not only is it hard for them to throw you off your game, you're going to have a lot more professional enemies.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that. Well, actually, before we get there, let's pause on that for a second, because you talked about your journey. I want to get to the point, and you kind of skimmed over, and I don't want you to do it, because I think it is so important. We started with you not thinking that you had the qualifications, and you got the position, right? And you quickly moved up to supervisor, right? And from supervisor, you just were talking about it. Supervisor, you went where?
So after being the supervisor, I realized that, you know, I had a feeling that that was as high as I was going to go in that particular company, right? Because, you know, at that point, I still just had the associates. And I was still in school working towards my bachelor's, still in the public forum. And I mean, still in the non-for-profit arena.
Okay.
And then I got in a job in the public hospitals here in the city. And it was very entry level. It wasn't a particular line like the lowest line level, but it was almost a intermediate supervisory position, because I had come from being a supervisor. So, you know, that and the associates helped me to get into kind of a very lower managerial. I'm still within the union, which, you know, thank God I was, because if I wasn't in the union, Jackie, so, you know, your cousin. Uh-huh. And so what that allowed me to do was to work in the psychiatric emergency room. And that's when I realized, like, I needed to have the skills to help navigate marginalized people. Right.
Okay.
So, and that's where I got my, you know, the love for mental health and psychology was really, I realized I loved that when I was at the non-for-profit. And so my major in school was, actually at the time I was trying to, I got my first degree in liberal arts, and my second degree I got in psychology and sociology, because I realized that working with that population, I needed to understand human development.
Right.
And I found it fascinating to, you know, you grew up in, you know, I grew up in the hood, I'm not going to front. And, you know, I was reading stuff in the books that were about people I knew.
Right.
And I saw why neighborhoods were how they were. And I see how funding got streamed a certain way, and how, you know, what were the ramifications for people in need or underserved people, right? And usually black and brown people, right? Or immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. Or women.
Right.
And so, you know, working in this psychiatric emergency room. And so then I moved to another position where they saw my case management skills. Again, I still wasn't at a point where I thought I belonged, because, you know, they have the imposter syndrome where although you're gaining the skills, or you have the degree and you have, you know, the experience needed for that position, but still not feeling like, maybe they made a mistake, but I'm going to ride this out and finish this job. You know what I mean?
But my reward kept going.
And one of my biggest rewards was to have my clients say thank you.
Okay.
And see how it made a difference in my clients' life.
Right.
And getting them to the next level in their life, and seeing how that really benefited not just them, but their family, therefore the community. Therefore, the whole entire city, right? Because we're all contributors to this whole social realm. And it's a funny story. You know, I actually was, so they had a opportunity for someone to be a supervisor for peer counselors. And at that early time, that had to be in about 2000 and maybe 3 or 4, maybe, and at that time, you know, people were still in the thought frame of someone with a mental illness, they can't do anything. You know, someone with a mental illness, they can't function. That's it. And the peer counselor, and at that time I had finished, you know, finished my bachelor's. So, you know, I worked and, you know, wasn't making any money, Jackie. I was taking several for the team. By then I already had, you know, my daughter, you know what I mean?
Right.
And in a relationship that was not the best, right? Mm-hmm. But still not stopping, never stopping and realizing that I'm working towards something, as well as having these two little wonderful people in my life watching me.
Right. Let's talk about that, though. Not stopping, because we are, you know, we obviously know each other and we're family. Let's talk about what you were going through personally and how you got through that to continue on doing the work that you're doing, and did that help propel you to where you are now? So let's kind of talk about that.
Oh, definitely.
Hi, guys. I wanted to come in and let you know that content in this part of the podcast contains information and discussions of domestic violence, which some listeners may find triggering. If you need support at any time, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. Now back to the episode.
Definitely. So during the time in between, you know, ending the bachelor's and actually being in my first year of my master's, I was in a domestically violent relationship. And it ended actually pretty traumatic. And I had to recover, actually.
Right.
And during my recovery, you know, I look back and I realize, you know, I had a really traumatic event. Like, I had reconstructive surgery on my face.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I couldn't do that anymore. My children were worth more. At the time, my daughter was about 2. And I said, I refuse to allow her to witness that. Right. And I needed to help my son to see the world through a loving, committed relationship, not what I had. Even in the midst of that, I never stopped going to school. Like, Jackie, I'm looking back and I don't know how.
Where did that come from? That
came from a will.
We talk about our family a lot and the women in our family and the models that we had. And I bring this up because there are women going through this today, and you speak publicly on this, you know?
So yeah, I do.
It's not a secret for you, and you don't hide it.
No,
you definitely
not at all.
Publicly on this, and you're a proponent, you know, a huge advocate for helping women out of domestic violence situations. There are women going through this now, and showing up to work every day. And there are some women who can't, for whatever reason, show up for themselves.
Right.
Give us some inspiration on that. What would you say to that woman?
I would say that you are worth it all.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that we sometimes see that as a cliche.
Right.
You're worth it. You're worth it. And you think, worth what? When you have low self-esteem, what am I worth?
Right.
You know? I'm worth being happy. I'm worth that my opinion matters. I'm worth that when I say the things that I need in my life and the things that I deserve, that I get it. Mm-hmm. I'm worth that. And if my partner can't give me that love or see me through that lens, then you're not worth having me in your life anymore. And now I have to withdraw knowing that there's something much better for me out there. And a big promoter for me is my belief in God.
Right.
I had to see myself through his eyes. I had to see myself that the love that he had for me, even when I didn't feel it for myself, was still present.
Right.
And it still pushed me to knowing that, you see, there's a saying in the Bible that God promises that your latter days are going to be better than your former.
Right.
So if that's the promise, I know tomorrow and next year and 10 years from now, it's going to be better than yesterday, so I had to keep fighting. Mm-hmm. I fought because I realized that if I stayed in that cycle, it would eat me up alive, Jackie. I couldn't be there. It was not happy. I could not be in my bliss. I had to constantly think of how am I defending myself or how am I navigating being in a relationship and still being a single mom. Like, right. What the hell is that? Right. Mm-hmm. And just realizing that the people that love me didn't want to see me in pain either. Right. And so all the advice I was getting and, you know, why are you still with that? And it actually penetrated. One day I was in graduate school, and Jackie, I tell you no lie, girl. I was in graduate school and I'm reading in the book about domestic violence, and Jackie, it was then that I realized this is me. Right. I was like, oh, snap, I've experienced that, right. I felt that, I went through that. And I had an epiphany. Being educated gave me an epiphany, Jackie. And I made up my mind and I said, hell to the no, because all of those things equated me being a statistic.
Yes.
And it transmitted to my children being a statistic.
Yes.
And it transmitted to my role and my place in the society to equate that of a statistic. And I said, oh no, sugar honey, right. You're in graduate school and you're going through all of this. And that's when there was a tragic end. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I look back and I love my journey and I own it, because those are the pieces that happened in my life to bring me to the next level. And I don't hate anybody.
I have to
please understand.
And I know you, and I know you don't, because of where we come from and how we grew up in our belief system. I do have to say this, though, just for clarification, no one is dead.
No one is dead.
But there was death to the old you, right?
Death to the old me. Definitely. Exactly. Definitely.
As you were talking, it's funny. I have a post-it note. We're not on video. I have a post-it note that I keep next to my keyboard, and it is here and it's all rubbed out, and I'm going to read it because I think it's so apropos. I have a note on here. I heard this a few months back, and when I heard it, I wrote it down immediately and just posted it on my computer and closed the computer, and it just has been there. And so you were speaking, and I think this is apropos. It says, you can't solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that created it.
Right.
So when you were talking about being in graduate school and reading this, like, you took yourself out of, you know, you saw where you were, right? And it took for you to have a different level of knowledge, right? A different level of being, to now saying, okay, I can't be the same person and think I'm going to solve this, because right. It wasn't working, obviously, all those years. You had right. to come out of that, right? So I think that was so apropos. You can't solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that created it. So
yeah, it's impossible, because then you're circling around the same thought patterns and the same right. behavioral patterns,
right.
right? And you're getting the same input from the same people that may not be beneficial to your growth.
Right.
And so coming out of that was when I felt empowered. I mean, it took months for me to actually stop crying.
Right, I remember.
And during that time, it was cathartic for me, and I didn't realize it at the time, but it allowed me to get closer to my mom. It allowed me, like, you and Rocky were always in my corner, you know, and I could share things with both you ladies that I don't tell anybody else. You know what I mean? And I got to the point where I felt like I was doing this. Like, I, in high school, I never thought I would have gone to college. I'm now in a master's program, a victorious survivor of domestic violence, a wonderful mother of two, a homeowner, mm-hmm. right? You know, I bought a house after I graduated and got my first job. I mean, it wasn't even paying a lot, and I just made it work, Jackie. It work.
I know. And that's why you're on the show today. Because
you know, and listen, it was not even a thing where it's like I envisioned a life that I wanted, and I envisioned being equipped. I didn't realize that my entire journey from day one was equipping me.
Right.
And every interaction and every person I met and every experience developed me into who I am today. Because I always say, it's not add water and mix. Right. There's nothing in life that is add water and mix and voila, we have a perfect concoction. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
And so even, once I graduated from the graduate program, I had already come to terms with what had happened in my relationship. You know, there's no hate. I have to thank God that I don't harvest and hold any of the negativity in my heart, because I look back and that was the journey. I actually made some choices that put myself in certain situations. I can't deny that out of the equation. I can't.
Right, but
I also see the hand that God played in putting people around me that supported me and helped me to navigate, because it's in my opinion, it's super hard to try to do it alone.
Absolutely.
In my opinion, it's almost impossible to not have support from authentic people that really want to see you succeed. That's the point of it. Even when you don't see it in yourself.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And really believing that, because low self-esteem would make you feel like, oh, you just saying that because you want to make me feel better. No, chick, you told me I'm a bad chick. I'm a bad chick.
Right. Right.
You know, you're telling me that you believe in what I'm doing. I'm proud of you. And you know, I tell you, girl, that I love you, Jackie. Like, I think you are educated, awesome. You're fearless. You know, despite any other odds against you, you keep it moving and you take your seat. And you taught me to have that seat at the table and belong. You told me there's a seat at the table for you and own it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to visualize that.
Right.
You know, sometimes you actually have to visualize sitting down at the table of success, and every person, white, black, male, female, whatever, we all sit in there collectively together, because we all belong, and I belong as a part of that we. I am a part of that we.
Right.
And so the setbacks have propelled me to keep going. And another point I want to make is that, you know, and I don't want to sound petty, but there's a lot of haters out there that say, look at her, she fell and she's not going to get up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And for good or bad, that was one of my motivators. Because, I, you know, there's a part of me that says, I want you to eat those words.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Call it me might petty, be a little... man. I'm petty, Davis.
I'm petty Betty, too.
I don't think that's being petty. I think pettiness is more vindictive. I don't think that's being petty.
Yeah,
I think it's more, you know, it's a motivation. You use that as motivation, right? You're not going... I'm not going to allow you to determine my future, you know, my fate or anything like that. I am going to do what I need to do to get to where I want to get to. And guess what? You're going to watch me.
Yeah.
Because I have favor. And you're going to eat those words. You know, sometimes those things are motivation for you. Those things are things that will get you to the next level.
The flip side of that, the other side of that coin is showing those people that you need to, that love you and are looking, and like our children.
Right.
The flip side of that is, I'm going to do this and I'm going to show you that we could do this, that mommy could do this, that mommy doesn't stop. And there are no odds that's going to stop. So the one side is for the naysayers, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to show you I could do it. But then the other side is for our parents and our family and our children, that we definitely have to give them that right example of I'm going to make it, and you're going to see me overcome these obstacles, and you're going to see me turn lemons into lemonade, and I'm going to keep doing it over and over again, and I'm going to show you. So, you know, even that sense of I'm going to show you, it goes twofold for those who are the naysayers and for those that we have to stay motivated to be an example, you know?
So let's jump a little bit ahead. Mm-hmm. To where you are now, you know, we talked about a lot on this so far. And obviously there has been challenges and setbacks and roadblocks, and you worked your way through it, bruised as you know, literally, figuratively, you came through to the other side, and it's not all milk and honey. And so I don't even want to portray that, because even with me as well, I want to get to certain levels. I'm at a certain level, senior level. It's not easy. You know, every day, or maybe every other day, there's a challenge. You know, it's a challenge. Is it a challenge that you don't want to face? Absolutely not, because I know it's more than me. It's beyond me. It's right. me helping other people. It's me helping people to get to where they want to be. You and I are both in the business of servicing others, right?
Right.
Putting others, not necessarily their needs before ours, but, you know, helping people to live good, helping people to be where they need to be, and giving them the tools and, you know, the motivation and support that they need to just live and just to be basically happy, you know, to feel right. fulfilled, to feel worthy, to have confidence. Both of us are in that type of field. At the same time, in doing that, there are challenges. There are struggles on a day-to-day basis. I still am working with clients. I'm not a, you know, considered, I'm doing air quotes, full-time employee, you know, traditional employee. I am a consultant, and I still right. work in corporate America. There are still challenges in that realm. You know, I'm in the private sector, you're in the public sector. I know the challenges that I face as the way I look, you know, I'm right. authentic. There was one point where I was wearing a very low faded haircut, you know,
right.
people that looked like me were not in executive meetings. Period.
Right.
And
right.
we're talking period. 20 years ago. This is not a new fad. I just started growing my hair out, you know? So this mm-hmm. was way back when that was like, what? You know?
What?
But I'm still facing a lot of challenges. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit, because you are at an executive level, right? Where a lot of people want to get to, a lot of my listeners want to get to, and I don't want to make it seem like it is, you know, just easy peasy. I have a program to get there. I have a program that will help you get to that. But please know that you are going to experience challenges. You're going to experience pushback. You're going to experience roadblocks from people that you would not even expect. And because I work with women, from other women. You know,
I want
you to talk about that a little bit. Some of the, what you can talk about, right?
Right.
Some of the challenges that you face, you know, or had to face to get to where you are, and to just to exist in that space, you know? So talk about that a little bit.
So, that is, in my opinion, a daily challenge, right? And I don't want to say it's a daily challenge to make it seem daunting, because when you start to recognize it and master it, you're prepared for it. And being prepared is the key
Absolutely.
To facing that, right?
Absolutely.
And so I just want to say, you know, one of my earlier, when I was first, prior to, this is a couple years back when I did inpatient psychiatry. One of my first opportunities to feel like I was at the table, a clinician now among other clinicians, and there was no other clinician that looked like me. I was the only black girl at the table,
right?
You know, and you know, I realized this is just a couple of weeks into the job, and you know, we're talking, you know, in clinical meetings, you have to talk about the client and prepare the day of, you know, who's on the ward, what are the issues, and how do we collaborate. And there was a day that, you know, and I had seen it, you know, the talks happening, and there was a day where they were talking about a particular client of color, but all of the terms were derogatory, and all of the assumptions were derogatory and biased. And that was the first time, and it was such a life-changing moment for me, that everything in me was so enraged that professionally I found my words to say, I'm going to stop you all here because I'm a person of color. Right. And I'm not going to stay in the midst of this and hear you negate someone based on stereotypical anecdotes and stigma.
Right.
That statement allowed me to find the first firm footing I had in my career because I stood up for myself and it was based on something professional and ethical. And it changed the environment of me working with professionals at that time, me right. now being a clinical professional.
Right.
So now fast
right.
forward to today.
Mm-hmm.
And I wear my hair natural, you
right.
know, and it's still in a time where people, you know, that are not black or brown say, oh, your hair looks like it's soft.
Right.
That's because I moisturize it. You know what I mean? That's because I decided to wash it and I moisturize it, you know. And, you know, it's a thing where, again, like I said, my theme for 2019 was I like me enough for me and you. I had to grasp that. Because there are little ways that non-black people will try to leave you out.
Yeah, microaggressions.
There are ways that black people and people of color will try to leave you out, right? So I don't want to say that it's
women
a race thing, in particularly
mm-hmm.
women who, because you are confident, and even if that's not my most confident day,
okay.
I'm putting on that air of confidence, right?
Yes.
Not pompy, not pompous,
right?
Not
right.
arrogant, but confident, because there's a difference.
Absolutely.
And I'm walking within my realm of being a subject matter expert. And
go.
I understand this realm because of my experience, my years of experience in education, that I am looking past your ignorance and
yes.
your working below a professional on an ethical level, and I'm still reaching for my professional heights. And I think that when I walk into work on a daily basis, I have to remind myself and I have to love me.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give Melissa an emotional hug while I'm walking through that door to know that you will be tested again today, Melissa,
yeah.
like it happened before.
Yeah.
But you knew how to handle it before, and now I learned something from the last time. So there's even a strategy
yeah.
that you have to develop in any workplace. There are times where you're forward professionally, always within company standard and ethics.
Mm-hmm.
But still exerting that I'm working towards the goal of the organization.
Right.
And if I parcel it out to saying I have to win over ABC, then that's a different dynamic, right? That's a different motivation.
Right.
And some agencies just have more men than women.
Yeah.
And, you know,
right.
like, we're not looking at gender.
Right.
We're not looking
right.
at color. We're looking at how did we all get selected to play a role in this organization
right.
and how we're going to bring our best foot forward. I mean, you know, sometimes it feels like you have to be oblivious to the ways people try to marginalize you and you just walk right through it. And sometimes you tap on the door and sometimes you got to kind of pound on it.
Some things you can't fight every battle. Some
right.
things you just out of maturity and experience,
mm-hmm.
you know, you just have to leave it alone because it's not
yeah.
worth your
not
time
worth it.
To
mm-hmm.
even go there.
Mm-hmm.
I had very early in my career, I worked in the IT space and it's not, you know, full of women. It's still male dominated.
Right.
Very technical and male dominated. Oh gosh, I have stories. But this one in particular,
mm-hmm.
where I had to sit and ask myself, is it worth it? And then look at the source of where it's coming from, right? And
mm-hmm.
I just moved on because it wasn't worth it. There
right.
was a gentleman, much older, at least 40, 50 years older, very, very elderly.
Mm-hmm.
He used to call me doll. He would call me hun. He would call me, what did he call me? He never called me, you know, nothing racial or anything like that, but, you know, what we would consider today sexist or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, hun, or doll, can you? And I was like, do I address it? Because he's like 75. You know what I mean?
Right.
And this
right.
is 20 years ago. That was 20
right.
years ago. So imagine when he grew up. that was acceptable because women were just coming into the workplace. They didn't know how to work with women, how to address women. And I was like, he's about to retire. Like, is it worth my time? Right. I did one time say to him, it's Jackie, you know, and I just left it at that and kept it moving. Right.
Right.
That was to me personally for Jackie, that was very, very minor. But there have been some overt situations that more on the racial side, obviously, obviously, but I had to say something because I had to make it known what was acceptable with me and what was not acceptable.
Right.
And I kept it moving. Now you have now shown me who you are.
Yeah.
And I will act accordingly. You know, I will
exactly accordingly. Exactly. So
talk about that a little bit. When people show you who they are, how do you navigate that and deal with that in the workplace? What are your tips on that?
So for me, I believe in having a professional muscle memory, right? Because
it's hard.
You know, it's hard. And the reason why I say that is because in the realm of work that I do, and you know, I look through the lens as a social worker, I tend to look at it professionally, and I also tend to look at it socially. Like, what are the dynamics that created you that made you feel like you could say or do that to me? You know what I mean?
And
for me, just kind of putting it in context and holding that as a professional muscle memory in terms of the next time we come to a intersection where we're even remotely going to have an interaction like that, I know how to deal with you. So say, for instance, you know, you have some people that when it's their project and they need your participation, it's, you know, I'm ready to help. You know, we're a team. But then when it's my project, you know, you're not available and you don't want to really see it move. You really don't want to see the needle move.
Right.
And so I'm looking at it through the lens of, okay, I got you. I'm going to look at the other resources and the other human capacities we have in here, and I'm going to get what I need. And I'm going to offer you inclusion.
Right.
Whether you take it or not, because there's going to be somebody else that's in here that's going to be successful over this project.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You kind of keep it moving. You don't let it stop you. You don't let
it. No, you can't.
Keep it moving. It's like you either keep you it moving. Get on the train or you don't get on the train, but this train is moving.
The train is moving. True. We got to keep on moving. And we're moving towards success.
Right.
We're moving towards the goal of helping the people that we serve. The minute I make it about me, I lose. The minute that I make it about my soul, my only success is when I lose. I have to incorporate the skills and the assets that I have at my disposal or within my reach within my company or with even in my city to say, okay, you want to close the door on me? I got you. I see you. But I'm going to find an open window. I'm going to find where the draft is coming through. I'm going to see where somebody left the door open, and I'm going to go through that avenue, and I'm going to get what I need.
Right.
You see, and it all goes back to how we were raised.
Right.
We were raised with women and men in our life that if they had one piece of meat and a little bit of rice and some vegetables, everybody ate. And it was delicious. and we didn't feel like we lacked anything.
Right.
So now just looking back at that resource that Mavis made sure that all of us had.
Yeah.
Right. Our grandmother made sure we had that, and we navigated these systems to be able to use resources wisely to bring us to our next level and our next venture in life. So, you know, just really, if I could give a word of advice to women in striving to be in executive and leadership positions, just understand and embrace the journey. And along the way, you're going to learn tools. You have to really open your mind to see where is God sending me a lesson.
Yeah.
Where is he sending me a person that's here to support me? Where is he sending a person who's attempting to be a barrier for me to be prepared to stop you from becoming a barrier or a stone in my path, right? Where are you showing me that there's a window or a door open to my next venture, right? Where are you giving me opportunities to speak publicly or speak in a forum where my knowledge base is now known throughout this arena or this corporation or even through other leadership in the city? Because now I'm still looking for my next move.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? How right. do I strategize to make myself in a win-win situation more times than I'm in a win-lose? And even a win-lose situation, I learn something from it.
Absolutely.
And I take that lesson and I move with it and I allow it to strengthen me and not feel like a setback is really a setback, but a setback is allowing me to see, okay, so where did I go wrong here?
Right.
And how am I going to avoid not doing this again and keep it moving? Because that's the, to me, I think, you know, again, coming to terms with who I am, mm-hmm. with what I've experienced.
Right.
With really appreciating that despite all the experience, I'm still really abundantly and wonderfully made and full of love,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that I envision my future, and I pray about my future and I meditate on my future because it's going to come to fruition because of that positive energy that I constantly invest in myself. And a part of that is really not only liking me, but giving myself a break. Not being my own worst critic, you know, not allowing I always say the world will eat you up and spit you out.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you let it. And how am I going to be, I'm Team Lisa all day. So either you Team Lisa or you not. You know, at this point in my life, there's no in between, you know,
right.
And you mentioned earlier, Jackie, which I love, you know, looking at your circle, you know, and who's in your circle.
It's
and
your
there's
circle.
Certain times that people, there's different levels. I see like three rings around me. Either you in that outer ring, either you in that middle ring where I got to give you some distance, or you right up in the center with me.
Right.
Absolutely. And you position people accordingly to how some people get out the ring all together and you got to just say bye bye. That's sometimes the best work you do is just saying, listen, you don't fit in any of these rings.
Yes.
You don't fit in any of the spheres around me.
Right.
And it's time for me to kind of cut that off. And
we can't be afraid to do that. You know,
yeah.
you feel successful and you see successful people do that.
They
don't have everybody around them.
Nope.
You know,
they have
a specific, and I think you're right with the three rings, you know, your sphere of influence, not necessarily influence, but your people, right?
Right.
And you have the next ring out and then the next ring out. If you don't fit in any of those, you're not for me. You're not for me.
That's right.
You know, just it is just that simple, but people are very stubborn in their way and don't want to let go of certain things because it's just so comfortable, or certain
yes.
people because they're so comfortable.
Yes.
Or, you know, I grew up with this person.
Right.
Okay. And,
right. And
you know, everyone
right.
grows and everyone expands. Well, you should expand.
Right.
And if they're not vibrating, if you will, at the same frequency
you are, that's right,
you may have to reevaluate that relationship.
Yeah. Really. And you know, I love when you say reevaluate, because sometimes the person on that outer ring works their way right up into the center.
Yes. Yes.
And somebody from the center actually works their way not only to the third ring, but completely out,
yes.
completely gone in a non-entity. You know, your aunt, my mom says, you know, there's certain people that you have to make into a non-entity. And I never understood
same thing.
What that meant. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You know,
and it
took me some while to understand that a non-entity, you exist. I know you exist.
Exactly.
I might even say see you and say hello.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have
distance. I have to, yes. you know, from a distance.
From a distance.
It's either not healthy for me or, you know, and if you even take that into just personal relationships as well, you know, everybody doesn't need to be in your circle.
No.
Because there are some people that if you are looking at your life, why can't I get to here? Why can't I get to there? Look at your circle.
Right.
Who's with you or who's rowing with you? Who's applauding you? Who's cheering you on? Not with what they say, not with what they say. Please understand and listen. Not with what they say, because you can have your quote unquote enemy saying to you, oh girl, good,
The sweetest things.
It has to be their actions. If their actions do not match their words.
Listen, the devil was an angel. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yes,
the devil was one of God's angels. So understand that people will do the same exact thing to you and just be on your guard and protect your heart and your mind.
Right.
You know, and it goes back to my motto. I don't know what my motto is going to be for 2020, but this year it's been working for me. I like me more than you. I like me enough for me and you.
Right.
You know, I remember I was in a meeting at, you know, at one of my jobs and, in the past, and I shared my motto. And people looked at me and they were like offended. Like, how dare she like herself? And then, you know, it made me realize that even when we individually build our confidence, not everybody wants to see that. Not everybody feels comfortable with that.
Yeah.
You know, especially from afar, some people see the light that you emit, that you emote way before you get close to them. So you got this beautiful light around you. You got this positive energy. You're educated. You're confident. Mm-hmm. How dare you not care of what I think about you? Like, how dare you?
Right.
How dare you not incorporate that and, you know, and have that influence and color your day, right? But I deserve and I can do that because I'm owning this whole body, this whole God-given blessed life. I am enjoying it, and despite how you interpret me, or even on a bad day where I might not be feeling as confident, I still like me because I'm entitled to have good and bad days. I'm entitled to have a range of emotions. I'm entitled to strive for beauty and love. I'm entitled to that. I can do that, and you being satisfied or dissatisfied, that deems you where you fall in my circle of life, in my spheres of life, you know? Yeah.
Oh my goodness. We could go
on. You know, me and you could go on forever. Exactly.
Go on for hours. But Lisa, you are an amazing person. You're great.
As you are too.
I get it from you. No, your grit, your tenacity, your confidence, like you have a confidence level that I honestly strive to get there because there's something.
And can I tell you, I don't mean to interrupt you, Jackie, but you have a confidence level that I strive to. So that speaks volume.
Okay.
I mean, honestly and authentically, I from the bottom of my heart, and I know that we're completely speaking from the same sentiment. I look at you and I strive to have not only the confidence, but the assurance of taking leaps and bounds in territories unknown and landing with your feet firmly planted and being successful and reaching for more. So I think the admiration that we have for each other is completely mutual and authentic, my love.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, this has been really, really amazing for me. Even though we are family and know each other very well, this still was amazing. And I wanted to introduce my listeners to you because there's so many pieces of inspiration that you just bring. And let me just put it this way. Lisa is authentic as it gets. And we kind of joked, and I'm going to tell everyone, Lisa, we kind of joked before we started recording, because Lisa is a person you don't put on speakerphone. Right?
Exactly. Thank you, Jackie. I love you for knowing me so well.
You don't put her on speakerphone. You don't put me on speakerphone. Those who
That's right.
Me, not please, because you will be embarrassed, right?
Exactly.
So I'm so nervous. But my nerves wasn't more around what you would say. I know that you're authentic, you know.
Thank you.
You're very authentic and you're giving and you don't hold back. And I knew that this would be really beneficial to women out there who are going through some things, you know, because we all go through something. And
yep.
What I wanted to do with this summer series, specifically for Bench Talk, was to present women who have gone through some things and have gotten to, I don't even want to say the mountaintop or whatever, but they've reached a level of success that they've deemed for themselves, you know, successful, and are still reaching for more to help others, you know, being in service for others. So I wanted to bring you into that fold as well and to introduce my listeners to you, because of, you know, there is motivation and inspiration to get from your story. We all have a story. We all have a background. We all have goals and a future that we want to attain. And I really think that, or, you know, I believe that listening to your story, listening to your authenticity, you being who you are in the space that you're in, it is doable. You know, it's definitely doable. You know, there are going to be challenges, but you have to really come up from that and move through that and, you know, find ways and people to help you navigate through it all. So I really wanted to provide a platform to expose that and expose my listeners to women who have done just that. So I thank you.
I thank you.
Thank you for joining us today and giving us so, so much. And I wrote down my quote. I like me enough for me and you. You know,
that's
that confidence right there, you know, say no more. So Lisa, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. And go ahead.
I just want to say it's my honor to definitely get to have this opportunity. And I appreciate the work that you're doing, because it's not only needed, it is long-lasting, you know, just knowing tools and principles to help us navigate and to help our children also navigate. So I thank you, and it's my honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And so with that, thank you guys for listening. I know this was a little bit longer than normal, but when we flow, right? When
there's
a message to be given and a message to be heard. So I really wanted to bring that to you all today. So thank you to all my listeners out there. See you soon.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Bench Talk. Be sure to catch up on previous episodes at benchtalk.net. This is Jackie Mitchell, your career consultant. Be sure to follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Jackie Mitchell CC. And on Twitter, Jackie Mitch, that's Jackie M-I-T-C-H-C-C. Thank you guys.